In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Modern elections are fought primarily on social media. In the United States, even Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's called for breaking up big tech companies like Facebook and Google, has spent more money than any other Democratic presidential candidate on those platforms. She doesn't like it, but she knows how the game is played. This fall, though, the game will be played differently in Canada, at least on Facebook. And if you want to know why, you can start with the fact that it hasn't really been a good year for the big blue giant.
50 million Facebook users have been affected after another massive data breach involving the social media giant.
Can Facebook be trusted with your personal information? That was one of the many questions being asked today of CEO Mark Zuckerberg as he appeared before a U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee.
Canada's Privacy Commissioner has launched a formal investigation into whether Facebook violated federal laws.
We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was a big mistake, and I'm sorry.
So Mark Zuckerberg and his company have decided to play by the book and take a step towards transparency, just for one election, just in Canada. Will it make a difference? Will you even notice it? Is it the tiniest drop in a gigantic online swamp? Or is it a sign that maybe, just maybe, we are all getting a little bit smarter about recognizing what happens when politics meets the internet without any rules? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
I think we're only catching up to Facebook's impact. I think only Facebook is starting to understand their impact.
Jesse Hirsch is a futurist, a researcher, and a public speaker, and we like to talk to him about social media. Tell me a little bit about what Facebook has promised to do in Canada ahead of our election this year.
In essence, they've promised to really archive all the advertisements, all the political activity that happens at their platform, both to comply with the new Canadian Elections Act that sort of calls for archiving and calls for greater scrutiny, but also to sort of demonstrate that they're becoming responsible, that rather than part of the problem, they're part of the solution. And from a market perspective, they're really cementing their central role in the electoral process. Because it's not a cliche to say that elections are often now waged on Facebook. And I think Facebook wants to make sure that they're not only trusted, but they are central to the business of running elections, at least when it comes to advertising. So by having transparency, by allowing people to look at all the political advertisements that happen on Facebook and see who purchased them, Facebook is hoping that they sort of turn a corner when it comes to the scrutiny of their impact on politics and elections in particular.
What kinds of things are we going to learn from this data? And are those things likely to change how people see these ads or how we analyze them?
I think the big difference between traditional election advertising and Facebook is the personalization. I mean, when we hear a radio ad, it's the same radio ad for everybody. When we see a television commercial, it's the same television commercial for everyone. What makes Facebook unique is that when a campaign, when a candidate or a party places ads, they place different ads for different people. That allows them to, say, target people in Toronto or target people in Calgary or target people in Sioux Lookout. And so we'll now be able to see that. We'll be able to look at how different parts of the country receive different political messaging, or even different neighbors within your own community getting different messaging. And it not only gives us a glimpse in terms of how the political parties are waging their campaigns, but it also gives us a glimpse as to Facebook's influence on elections and whether we are seeing either manipulation or subversion or just the evolution of campaigning as we know it. So it creates a certain degree of transparency, but it also creates an interesting process of comparing all these different ads and looking at the way in which different Canadians are basically experiencing an almost different election because of the ads and messaging that they're seeing.
Every time we end up talking to you about social media, I end up a little bit dumbfounded at the ever-growing role, Facebook especially, but other big tech companies play in our democracy. How have the past few months played out for Facebook in countries around the world? Because we called you after Facebook made this announcement in Canada, which was pretty much the only positive press they've gotten lately, I think.
Indeed. Facebook is certainly dealing with a difficult time in their history. I mean, they're facing a lot of criticism. They're facing a lot of scrutiny from governments who are really concerned about the influence that they have on elections and at politics as a whole. And there's a lot of talk about regulation. There's a lot of talk about creating rules. There's even talk about breaking up Facebook and forcing them to sell Instagram and sell WhatsApp and treat each of their businesses as a separate entity. And so Facebook is desperate for some credibility. They're desperate for some good news. And I think that's where they see the Canadian election as a huge opportunity, both when it comes to refining this technology so that they can offer transparency, so they could offer better oversight of political advertising and political campaigning, but also so they can show that they're a good citizen. They can show that they're a responsible corporation and that they want to work with the powers that be to sort of do the right thing. And if anything, it is, I think, a contrast to, you know, what we saw in New Zealand, what we saw originally with Cambridge Analytica, and what we've seen with a scandal that comes out as a trickle in terms of all the mismanagement and all the arrogance that the company has had over its history, that it's as if it's growing up. It's as if it's saying, well, we're almost 18, even though they're not, but from the voting perspective, maybe it's time that we're adults and started sitting at the adult table. And I think Canada's the first to really invite them in and to say, hey, what can you do to help our elections? What can you do to help our democracy? And I think Facebook is hoping that not only will Canadians see their service as a value, but that the rest of the world will see what they're doing in Canada and hope that they'll do the same there.
For all the bad press that you just mentioned and Facebook's attempt to kind of counter some of that, do we have any evidence that the past year of all these scandals has really impacted their bottom line or their market share? Because to a layperson, it certainly doesn't seem to have shrunk them at all.
I think we are now starting to see signs that Facebook is paying a price for their lack of governance and the scandal that's been creeping upon them. It partly reflects in reduced users, although it's only users on Facebook proper. They can still continue to experience significant growth with Instagram and WhatsApp. But they're also facing a revolt from advertisers, in that advertisers are really unhappy with Facebook and they're spending less on the platform. And while this hasn't had a direct impact in terms of their profitability, because they've always been ludicrously profitable, it is making the company anxious, and it is forcing them to really not just offer a mea culpa, but start to change their practices. And I think that's why the Canadian election is so significant, because it's not just about reputation, it's about money. And it's about showing advertisers that Facebook will help them reach their targets, in this case, voting Canadians. So it's an interesting sort of crossroads of whether the company is willing to grow up or whether this is the beginning of the end, not so much the end of Facebook, but maybe the end of Zuckerberg and Sandberg in terms of their leadership, and a time in which the company, in facing a crisis, might be forced to face new leadership.
From somebody's perspective who spends a lot of time looking at what data goes where, and especially personal data, what would you recommend that Canadians do with ads in this election? Should they be, how can they figure out who's being targeted, what groups they belong to? How does that all work?
Well, part of it, I think, is putting a lot of emphasis on the voter. I mean, that's my main criticism of Facebook's transparency initiative, is that it's great for researchers. It's great for policy wonks and journalists who have the time to sift through this archive and look at the different ads. But for the average Canadian voter, they often don't have the time. So I think where you're going to see it play out is at the workplace, or, you know, in the hockey rink, or the places where people get together and talk amongst themselves. And that's where I think you'll start to hear the comparison of, hey, did you see that ad from the Liberals? Or, hey, did you see that ad from the NDP or the Tories? And I think it's that type of anecdotal, sort of comparative conversation that'll be how most Canadians sort of talk about how they experience Facebook. But the other thing worth mentioning is conspiracy. Because one of the main criticisms of Facebook is that they're a bastion of conspiracy theory, that they encourage people to really think, to go to extremes when it comes to thinking about politics and expressing their politics. And we've certainly seen this in terms of some of the racism and some of the hate speech that is starting to creep its way into Canadian politics. And I think Facebook continues to be the kind of cesspool for that type of activity. And unfortunately, this transparency initiative only looks at the advertising. It doesn't look at people who are sharing content without paying, who are just sharing memes or sharing posts, because that's where a lot of the political activity happens. That's where people's opinions and perspectives are shaped. And I think that's where the journalists are going to be focusing. I think that's where the narrative is going to be focusing in terms of people trying to, you know, create conspiracies around Trudeau, or create conspiracies around Andrew Scheer, or even conspiracies around Jagmeet Singh. I think that's where you still have both a vulnerability, and I also think that's where Facebook's going to face a lot of criticism when it comes to the activity that I'm expecting once the writ is dropped.
Has there been any effort, either in Canada or in other countries, to find a way to regulate or make transparent that side of Facebook where the conspiracy theories spread? Is there anything on the table that we can do about that?
Sort of is the easy answer. I mean, on the one hand, Facebook keeps talking about algorithms and automation and machine learning and creating AI to identify that type of activity, whether it's hate speech, whether it's conspiracy theories or extremist content. They keep doubling down on technology as the solution to that. But the reality is it's humans. And on the flip side, Facebook continues to hire thousands of moderators and thousands of people whose job is to look for this extreme content when it's flagged and remove it. But as we saw in New Zealand, they're never fast enough. And that material gets out there anyway. So to go to your point about proposals, I mean, I think it's a job for journalists. What's interesting about this Canadian Transparency Initiative is that Facebook is saying that they will have humans. They will have a kind of advisory council who helps them figure out what is appropriate and what's not appropriate. So they're backing off their whole algorithms will save the world narrative, but they're still not really presenting a model of responsibility. They're not presenting a situation in which they will find extremists and they will, in essence, bring the rule of law to Facebook, especially when it comes to hate speech. And it's because they're afraid of regulation. On the one hand, they want to look responsible, but on the other hand, they don't actually want to take responsibility because that could result in regulations and laws that the company is trying to evade. So it's a bit of a sticky spot where they're doing this dance of, hey, we can handle this, while not actually introducing solid proposals that deal with the human element, that deal with the non-advertising content, which Facebook relies upon. They need people to post photos. They need people to post memes so that the rest of us will like them and engage. So it's a really slippery slope that Facebook is facing in terms of how much responsibility they take, while at the same time evading the larger social responsibility for the activity that takes place on their platform.
Well, this is probably a really dumb question then, but it seems like if a government or a non-social media business somewhere had committed these kinds of sins, whether they're explicitly against the law or not, pertaining to hate content or sharing of user data or any of the stuff relating to Cambridge Analytica, there would be massive investigations going on. A government caught doing this would probably be voted out of office. Why hasn't there been regulations or investigations?
I think part of it is an issue of competency. I think the regulators, the authorities, as we've known them, are still catching up. They're still trying to understand Facebook's impact. And, you know, a lot of it is because the research is just now coming out. This is the nature of technology, that we throw these tools out there and then we study them after the fact. And I think we're only catching up to Facebook's impact. I think only Facebook is starting to understand their impact. I mean, they really had a naive and innocent view of their role in society. And I think they are as shocked as anyone else in terms of how people are using their platform for violence or using their platform for hate. But I think governments are afraid of being seen as censors. They're afraid of limiting innovation or hurting these technology companies, which everyone on some level uses or loves. And yet, I think you're right. I think if it was any other company, they would be coming on them like a ton of bricks. So it really comes down to political will. And personally, I would love to see Facebook become an election issue. I would love for one of the parties to say, hey, we need to make rules for social media, or we need to make rules for algorithms or AI, and then debate it as an election issue so that Canadians can make up their own minds and, you know, start debating these types of policies and solutions. But instead, everyone's making like an ostrich and just sticking their head in the ground. And so it's left to journalists. It's left to people like you and me to have these conversations. And, you know, I do want to say, to give Facebook credit, at least they're trying. I mean, Google, on the other hand, they just said, we're out. We're not going to participate in the election at all. We're not going to accept any election advertising. We're not going to offer any transparency. We're just going to abstain. We're just going to not get involved. And that's even worse, because that's just saying, we don't care about you, Canada. We're just going to, you know, sit out the election. Even though YouTube, even though Google will play a huge role in terms of how people search for issues, search for candidates, and make up their minds. So, you know, while there isn't much political will to regulate these companies or to go after them, at least Facebook gives credit and they're trying to find a middle ground compared to Google, who's just saying, hey, we don't need you. We're out of here.
And when you say Google's going to sit out the election, obviously they're not sitting it out because YouTube will be up and running. So all we'll be missing is knowing where some of that content is coming from.
Well, and the advertising in particular. So Google has said that they will not accept political advertising because they will not be able to comply with the updated Election Act that recently passed. So, you know, it goes back to this notion of targeted advertising. At least on Facebook, thanks to their archive, we can get a sense of who the parties are targeting or who the candidates are targeting. But with Google, the parties and candidates will not be allowed to take out ads. So on the one hand, it pushes more activity to Facebook. But on the other hand, as you sort of inferred, it means the activity on YouTube will be underground. It means it won't be advertising, but they'll still upload commercials as videos, and they'll still have all sorts of other social media engagement that happens via YouTube and via the search engine. I mean, search engine optimization, the act of engineering what a search engine results show up, is hugely political, and for sure the parties and candidates will be doing that. It'll just all be opaque and outside of scrutiny because Google has decided that they don't want to be responsible and they don't want to comply to Canadian law.
I remember a while ago, we spent an entire 24-hour news cycle talking about why Omar Khadr was listed on Google as a Canadian soldier.
Well, and if anything, I think it also speaks to how central not just Facebook, but Google has come when it comes to an informed electorate. That, you know, people are no longer using radio and television as newspapers as their sole source of information. They're Googling. They're going on social media. And so I think the benefit of this next federal election is we will be paying more attention to the way in which these platforms and tools shape the outcome. Unfortunately, we won't actually be able to control how it shapes the outcome. So if we end up with either, you know, a minority government or a controversy around the election that undermines the legitimacy of whoever wins, well, then that just leaves us in the type of mire, the type of mess that I think a lot of people desire, but doesn't actually address the question of what role should these platforms play and what rules should they be subject to.
What's one piece of advice you'd have for Canadians, I guess like me, who have a Facebook account to share pictures of their kids with their grandparents, but are also going to be seeing a lot of election stuff in there and need to know how to navigate it?
Well, you know, my advice is to jump into the deep end. I mean, on the one hand, I don't think it makes sense to, as Google, sort of sit out the election. But at the same time, I think for Canadians, it really is an exercise in critical thinking. I very much want people to post about their issues, to post about their candidates, their party, to use these platforms as the kind of commons that they've become, as the dinner table in the digital sense, to argue with your friends and your family. But be critical and ask yourself, where is this information coming from? And is it credible? And what influence is it having? And that's why earlier I was alluding to why people should be talking to each other and comparing notes, and why it's not just amongst your family, it's not just amongst your friends. Talk to people who you don't agree with, not necessarily about politics, but about what they're seeing as a result of politics. And that's why I think that this federal election is a real pivotal point for the country, both when it comes to the influence that these platforms have, but also the way in which we as Canadians decide who our government's going to be. And that I think we're reaching a point of maturity as a country that we're no longer naive about how the political system works, but yet nor are we satisfied with its results. And that's where I think social media is a worthy battleground. It is a worthy place for people to really engage in politics, but still have critical distance. Because I think fundamentally, it's not about Facebook, it's not about Google, it's not about the political parties, it's about Canadians. And it reminds me of that old adage of democracy, use it or lose it. And I think the danger is that because of the reputation around Facebook, some people will say, oh, I don't want to go into the swamp, I don't want to get into it. And I think it's the opposite. I think that we need to bring democracy to Facebook. We need to bring the Canadian election to Facebook in a way that we embody by debating, by arguing, by discussing the issues. And I think it's through that public participation that we'll end up coming with the solution. We'll end up figuring out the rules, and we'll get a better democracy only because we as citizens, we as voters, actually get messy and try to make it happen.
You heard it here, a famous Canadian futurist telling you to argue with your relatives on Facebook about politics. Thanks a bunch, Jesse. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jordan.
Jesse Hirsch is a researcher, a public speaker, and a futurist. That was The Big Story. If you want more of them, they are at thebigstorypodcast.ca, and all of our podcasts are at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. If you want to find us to ask us a question, leave us a comment, tell us how much you love us or hate us, we are on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. And our whole network is on all your social media platforms at Frequency Pods on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And if you just want to listen, which is why you came here in the first place, we are wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love a rating or a review. That's Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Podkicker, RSS Radio, Harry Potter and the Open Source Listening Application. That one was fake. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.